time. Allow me to welcome everyone here to State Affairs. Calling the meeting to order exactly at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, March 2nd, 2010. At this time, please turn off any electronic devices, Christine, back there that you might have. Thank you. Please let the record reflect that with me this morning, I have Senator French, I'm Senator Menard, and then to my left is Senator Passfan. And Senator Meyer has joined us on time as well. And then in the corner, we have Sarah Munson, my staff person. So I would like to begin today with Senate Bill 190, Biometric Information for ID. And we have the bill's sponsor, Senator Wilikowski. Senator, please come forward and state your name and affiliation as well as your staff. You allow him to do that too at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski. I'm State Senator from Northeast Anchorage, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you on this bill. And with me is George Ascott from my staff.
Okay, if I can quickly interrupt, we have Senator Kukesh has joined us as well.
So. Sorry, I'm late.
No, you're right on time. Okay.
Thank you. I knew that.
Please continue.
Great, thank you. The purpose of this bill is to update a law that is already on the books that to protect our privacy rights from emerging new technologies. We already have a law on the books introduced by Senator Donnie Olson several years ago and passed unanimously by both bodies in the legislature in 2004 that outlaws the collection, analysis, or storage of a law-abiding person's genetic information or DNA without their written consent. And advances in DNA technology have obviously proven to be a great benefit to society in a wide variety of fields such as law enforcement and medicine. But this body recognized that, and the House recognized that DNA science also holds the potential for abuse and misuse, in particular to obtain information about people that they have a right to keep private. And in Alaska, we have a very, very strong privacy provision in our Constitution. And it was a wise decision made by the legislature in 2004 to protect people's rights to keep their DNA information private if they choose to do so. However, once again, emerging technologies threaten our privacy rights here in Alaska. DNA is only one form of what is known as biometric information, physiological characteristics that are entirely unique to an individual that can be used to obtain information about people that they have a right to keep private. One example of the potential misuse of biometric information is through the use of facial recognition technology. Through facial recognition technology, an individual can be tracked anywhere they go through the use of computer technology without their knowledge. In fact, in Great Britain, they have cameras set up and they're essentially tracking citizens all over the country. And I think most Alaskans would find that very offensive, and that's this exact sort of thing that we're trying to prevent in this bill. Alaskans have already rejected the Federal Real ID Act, which was passed overwhelmingly by this body several years ago. One potential requirement of which was to have radio frequency ID chips placed in our driver's licenses that would have allowed for our movements to have been tracked without our knowledge. Another form of biometric information is the fingerprint. And I was approached by an Alaskan in 2008 who was refused admittance to the state accountancy licensing exam because he refused to submit to fingerprinting. And that really was what spurred me to sponsor this piece of legislation. He offered, and I believe he'll be testifying today, but he offered his driver's license, his passport, his social security card, but was still told that this was an insufficient identification. And I agree with him that it is offensive to treat law-abiding citizens and privacy-loving Alaskans like criminals needing to be fingerprinted. I don't think that's the way our society should be headed. And even more appalling is we have confirmed that once scanned, the fingerprint data is often handed over to private data management firms for safekeeping. And it may interest you to know that, among other things, some of these private data management firms combine personal data sourced from multiple public and private databases for sale to the government and to the private sector. They sell, you can get your fingerprint taken at an accountancy exam and have it sold anywhere, or you can have other private information sold on the open market. So why are we forcing Alaskans to hand over fingerprint and other biometric data to prevent the possibility of rogue accountants operating outside the law? I don't think so. I think most Alaskans don't agree with that. And we realized that updating the law to include fingerprints was not enough. And so if we add fingerprints to the laws that protect our DNA, who is to stop these companies from collecting retinal scan information, facial characteristic information, or other private data for that matter? That's why we use the term biometric in drafting the law. So I'll stop right there, Madam Chair. Happy to answer questions. And I have my staffer here, George, who can probably answer some of the more technical ones.
Thank you. And I'm understanding, too, I've been getting a number of emails on this, that some of the management firms could be from Europe or Far East Asia. And that's troublesome as well, because as they contract out these services, they're not even United States companies that get the contracts.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. My colleagues, are there any questions of... Okay, and then Molly, I didn't ask, is there anyone on line? Or?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Sorry, I have a
Senator French, you have a question?
I just want to maybe build a record for us to understand the difference between the information contained in a photograph, there was a person here just taking photographs of us, and biometric information, especially with respect to facial DNA or facial characteristics. How do we distinguish between those two, between the innocuous and well-known practice of taking photographs and the unauthorized collection of biometric information?
Thank you, Senator French, through the chair. We have an article. We have several articles in the folder that we provided you, and I can just read you what this one article defines a facial biometric system as, and that's the interpretation that we have as well. It's typically made up of three components. First, you have a camera, and so there's a similarity there with someone taking a picture. But then you have two more systems. One is a software program needed, which determines if there is a face in that image located, among other things, the facial geometry, the placement of the eyes, the nose, the mouth, etc. And then thirdly, you need a system that is capable of classifying all those elements to differentiate between them and those of other persons. So unless you have those three components, you don't have a facial recognition system. And that's not at all what the intent is. We're not trying to ban photographs, obviously. The intent is the facial biometric type of systems.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, I'm going to go right to public testimony. We have online, off-net here, several that want to speak. Jason, I believe we all got your email. I certainly did. And if we can just keep this to possibly 3 minutes, I would appreciate that. You have quite a story to tell. So, Jason Giamil, would you please come on?
Yes, I'd be happy to. First of all, thank you very much for meeting to discuss this event. Like in a lot of ways, in many state laws are...
Jason, would you state your name, please, for the record and
of course, I'm sorry.
And your affiliation? Sorry.
Jason Giamil, Alaskan citizen, no, unaffiliated.
Okay, continue.
Okay, I'm sorry. So anyway, thank you again for meeting to discuss this very important issue. In a lot of ways, the laws are sometimes a decade behind technology, and things progress pretty quickly. So updating the laws to keep up with technology is certainly important, and I appreciate you looking into this. About 2 years ago, last week, as a matter of fact, I went in to take the final two parts of the CPA exam, which is, as any of you know who have gone through anything similar to that, the bar exam or anything, it's a life-changing experience, which is enormously challenging. And I had taken the first two parts fine. I passed, no fingerprints necessary. However, as of January 1st, 2008, there was a new policy put in place where anyone seeking to even sit for the CPA exam, regardless of other ID presented, and as was mentioned before, I presented my passport and my driver's license and a whole bunch of other ID. They said they refused me entrance because they said I lacked proper identification. And I said, well, what constitutes identification? And they said fingerprints only are sufficient, or fingerprints in addition to other ID. And I refused, because it was just completely illogical, and walking away from that exam after, you know, 5 months of preparation was probably the toughest thing I've ever had to do. However, subsequently in researching it, I'm very glad I did, because as was pointed out, this goes into a database that's transmitted over the Internet, or the fingerprint information is transmitted over the Internet, and it's hosted by a foreign data mining firm called ChoicePoint. ChoicePoint is the largest supplier of information to over 7,000 different companies, including the IRS, the FBI, Department of Homeland Security. I understand they just bought most of Mexico's driver's license database files, leading to small, outrageous protests down in Mexico. It's big business, and I think this is one very real example of where big business is masquerading as security.
Okay, thank you, Jason, for that testimony. Does that conclude your testimony, Jason?
I'm happy to answer any questions, but I think that's the bulk of it, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we'll go to Kelly Howell. Kelly, are you online to testify?
Madam Chair, this is, for the record, Kelly Howell. I'm a criminal justice planner with the Statewide Services Division of the Department of Public Safety, and I'm just available to answer questions if necessary.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. Then we'll go to Brenda Nation from the American Life Insurance, I guess.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. State your name, please, for the record, and your affiliation.
Sure. Brenda Nation. I represent the American Council of Life Insurers, otherwise known as ACLI. We're a national trade association that represents the interests of our member companies who market and sell life insurance, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance products in Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity to testify via teleconference today. We do have some concerns with SB 190 as it's written, and we have discussed those concerns with the Senator's staff, which I'll go into. Our concerns are twofold. First, it deals with the definition of biometric information in the bill. We feel like that definition is written so broadly that it's unclear what the definition would not encompass. And the term that's used in the definition in the bill, an individual's unique behavioral or physiological characteristics, we're not clear on what that means for us in terms of compliance with the bill if it does pass, because it appears to encompass just about anything about a person, whether they're healthy or unhealthy, in terms of being able to collect information on a person for the purpose of purchasing a life insurance or long-term care or disability income insurance policy. The current law that this is amending in this bill, they address not only the collection of biometric information, but also the retention and the disclosure of that information. And life insurers are already required under federal and state privacy laws and privacy regulations through your insurance division to obtain written consent from an individual before we can obtain their personal non-public health information. But in those regulations and laws, there are prohibitions on disclosure, and there are business exceptions in these laws that allow us the ability to be able to serve our customers and their policies once the information is collected. There's also exceptions found in the current statutory definition of DNA analysis that's not in the bill itself, but it's in the law where this is being amended. Those exceptions found in that definition of DNA analysis allow life insurers and others to collect and retain certain information in order to service our customers. So we've got the problem with the definition of biometric information with the broad brush stroke that it's the way it's written, and then the fact that the current law in this bill would allow a person to revoke his consent at any time. And that's also in the current law but not shown in this bill. That's section 18.13.010 subsection C that would say that once given the written consent, the person can revoke it at any time. So it makes it unclear to us as to what information would be protected and what information is not protected by the bill. So if the person gives the written consent and the insurer collects the needed health information to underwrite the policy, and then after the policy is issued, the person revokes his consent, we're wondering how we're going to be able to obtain the necessary information that we may need from, say, a doctor or a hospital or from some sort of medical records to pay a claim that's being submitted. So, for example, would the information included in a person's health history held by a doctor be considered biometric information because of this broad definition, so that the insurer and the doctor wouldn't be able to share the information in order to, say, pay a long-term care claim or a disability income insurance claim? And then we wonder if a person revokes his written consent, then how would the life insurer know what information would be considered biometric information in order to go back and redact that information from that person's file to be in compliance with this law? So it raises a lot of concerns for life insurers and the way that we do business. I did yesterday provide two suggested amendments to the senator's staff with regards to the definition of biometric information that I think would alleviate our concerns with the bill, and I'd be happy to go through those if you would like, Madam Chair, or answer any questions.
What is the will of the committee? Would that be helpful?
If I could just ask a question.
Okay, Senator Passavant. Brenda, would you just hold, please?
I'm sorry.
Just stay online, please, and Senator Passavant has a question.
Sure.
Yes, I'm curious when you say that you are looking to biometric information potentially to track one of the participants in a plan. It would be my expectation that you would have the plan number and then the participant number, and that you would track people using that information rather than biometric information. So what do you mean when you raise the question of using biometric information to track a person relating to payments of a medical procedure?
Well, Senator, we wouldn't, as far as the fingerprints, hand geometry, voice recognition, facial recognition, iris scan, retinal scan, those are not things that we use. Our concern with that definition is that the piece that reads the information that is based on an individual's unique behavioral or physiological characteristics. We don't know what that is. We know what a fingerprint is. We know what a hand geometry is and these other things, but we don't know with that broad language what those are. Would that encompass all kinds of other health information? That's the part that's unclear to us and that makes us nervous in how we would be able to comply with this law if it passed.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess to the sponsor, are there any concerns with you as far as the term biometric information? Do you feel it's too broad, Senator Wilikowski?
Madam Chair, I understand the concern. The intent is not to exclude necessary health insurance information. Quite frankly, just looking at it off the top of my head, I guess we could take out behavioral or physiological characteristics including, and then just define it as based on individual's unique fingerprints, hand geometry, et cetera, et cetera. The intent was to try to protect against future technologies, but if that's a big concern for the public, then I be open to taking that out.
So would it be safe then, as a follow-up, that you would see the insurance industry perhaps as a pushback, as explained by Brenda Nation from the American Council of Life Insurance, as to how we're using the word biometric information?
Madam Chair, the intent is to is to protect people's personal, private information. And the things that we have listed here, I think, are pretty inclusive. And so if the committee is concerned about the behavioral and physiological characteristics being interpreted in another way, I can kind of see their point, and so I would not object to taking those words out.
Okay, is there any other member that...
If I could just...
Okay, Senator Pascvan.
Senator Wilikowski, as I understand the other two components that you were talking about, it's not just the photograph, it's the use of scientific assembly or the collection of that data. And so would, you know, a individual's unique behavioral physiological characteristics analyzed or collected by a process that you would want to restrict? In other words, I'm trying to focus on trying to keep it as broad an application as possible so that we're not, because I like the bill. I mean, I think that people should be left alone as much as we can possibly leave them alone. And so it's the assembly of data by others and then scientifically or in a computer collecting that information, and then it's the I spy, we got you wherever you go. I mean, that's what troubles me about this. So I like the bill. I just don't want to open it up to where it's so loose that...
Right. You're absolutely right, Senator Pascvan, through the chair. The intent is to protect Alaskans' privacy. And, you know, DNA is obviously something that people are very concerned about, but now we have technology that's reached the stage where, like they do in Great Britain, they have cameras everywhere, and they track citizens' movements everywhere. And you can do that with facial recognition, you can do that with retinal scans, you can do that with iris scans. And again, it's just trying to figure out a way to protect Alaskans' personal private information. And so I, the way I'm looking at this, if we took out behavioral or physiological characteristics including, that may solve the problem. And I'm happy to go back and work with your office, Senator, and work with the insurance industry. And if that fixes the problem, then I'm happy to do that and work with your office as well, Senator Menard. Okay.
So on that note, to go back to what she alluded to, that she sent corrections to your office, and I'm seeing that maybe you didn't get those corrections.
I'm going to turn it over to my staff.
Senator Menard, I apologize. I don't have that with me. I have some suggested amendments that the ACLU has provided, and I see that I don't have them with me currently, but okay. I can provide them after the committee hearing.
Okay. I think to go forward with the committee hearing, I'll go ahead and get the other people to testify, and then we might hold this over till the next meeting to make those corrections. But thank you, Brenda. Is there any other questions of Brenda before I move on to... Okay, Teresa Bannister from Legal Services, are you here just to be online?
This is Teresa Bannister, and I'm present just to respond to questions if needed.
Okay, thank you, Teresa. Then we'll go to Jeffrey Mittman, ACLU, is it Anchorage, Alaska?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Jeffrey Mittman. I'm Executive Director of the ACLU of Alaska, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide written and oral testimony. We have previously provided to the committee chair, the sponsor, and the members of the committee our testimony. We want to thank Senator Wilikowski for introducing this bill. It's a proactive and forward-thinking look at the privacy issues that confront Alaskans and, in fact, all Americans. And with the advances in biometric technology and the ability to analyze and gather and retain personal, private medical information, it's important that these protections be put in place. We are generally supportive of the bill and are hopeful to see it enacted. We do have one concern, and that is in Section 2, the exceptions. And we've raised this with the sponsor and hope to work on a redrafting of the language. As currently written, Section 2, sub B, sub 6, which is on page 2, lines 11 and 12 of the current bill, allow for an exception for background checks as permitted or required by state statute or by federal statute or regulation. Our concern, of course, would be that the exception could be so overbroad as to completely encompass the rule. We hope to work with the sponsor, with the committee of the drafter, to ensure that the intention that necessary checks are allowed, but not in a way that is against an individual's will or consent or without their knowledge. Following that revision, we anticipate fully supporting the bill.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone that has any questions of Mr. Mittman? Okay, seeing none, then I'll go ahead and that's all we have online, so I'll go ahead and is there anyone in the audience that would like to come forward and testify on this? Okay, if committee members, then I'll go ahead and close public testimony. Thank you very much. If there's no objection, I'll go ahead and hold this over till probably around March 11th, and we'll put it on the docket for then, and by then we'll be able to clear up these questions. Okay, thank you very much.
Good bill.
Okay, next we'll go ahead with Senate Bill 284. And this bill is a reaction to the Supreme Court's decision of the Citizens United Federal Election Commission, in which the court determined that a corporation has the same First Amendment rights that an individual has in terms of campaign expenditures. So, Senator French, would you please come forward and state your name for the record and affiliation and speak to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. For the record, I'm Hollis French. I represent State Senate District M, and I'm here today to present Senate Bill 284. Since this is the bill's first hearing, perhaps I'll read the sponsor statement into the record, and then we can take a look at the underlying legislation. In the wake of the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling, Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission, the Senate Judiciary Committee has worked to determine the changes to Alaska's election laws that will be needed. Corporations have been banned from participating in Alaska's elections prior to this ruling. This means many of Alaska's laws requiring disclosure and disclaimers simply do not apply to corporations making independent expenditures to support or oppose specific candidates in elections. Testimony from legislative legal services attorneys and from the Alaska Department of Law indicate that changes would be needed to Alaska's campaign laws, and this bill was subsequently drafted to address the concerns raised by the attorneys and by committee members. Senate Bill 284 amends state election laws to clarify that corporations are covered by all applicable reporting requirements. It expands communication identification requirements to ensure accurate reporting of top contributors, to require the approval of the content by the principal officer of the corporation, and to require statements in each communication that its content has not been authorized or approved by the candidate. It also speeds reporting requirements for communications expenditures in the last 9 days of the election so that expenditures over $250 must be reported within 24 hours. Recent opinion surveys show broad disapproval by Americans across party lines for the decision reached by the U.S. Supreme Court. In order to retain Alaskans' trust in our system, it is vital that legislation be passed this year to ensure that corporations spending money to influence elections are at least required to disclose it in a timely fashion. I urge you and other committee members to support Senate Bill 284.
Okay, do I have any questions from our committee members for the sponsor? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator French, for bringing this important bill before us. If I recall, though, the ruling pertained to corporations and unions, and in your sponsor statement, you only address corporations. Was there any reason?
That was inadvertent. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that was inadvertent, and thank you for pointing that out. And you'll see throughout the bill, we, in many, many instances, default to a definition of person, which under our laws encompasses individuals, candidates, groups, non-group entities, corporations, and unions. So it's absolutely our intent to bring basically all players under the same set of laws and the same rules.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anyone else? And how are other states reacting to the Supreme Court ruling? I know it's up to individual states to put the reporting in place. So would you speak to that for a second?
Excellent question, Madam Chair, and thank you. The committee should have in your packets a
I think we just received
it. It may have just come this morning. It's hot off the press from yesterday.
I think we would have time to.
But you'll see that across the nation, states are, in essence, I hate to use the word scrambling, but they are hurrying to adopt new disclosure and disclaimer laws to get something on the books prior to upcoming elections. Connecticut, North Dakota, Ohio, and Pennsylvania have legislators and state officials reviewing the case. In Alaska, of course, we've had an opinion from our Attorney General, which I'm pleased to report largely endorses many of the requirements that our bill puts into place. Arizona, Colorado, Iowa, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, North Carolina, Oklahoma, and South Dakota, all working on legislation, as well as Tennessee, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. The bill's really, it's probably worth just sort of bringing the bill down to two main points, disclosure and disclaimer. Disclosure means reporting to the APOC what it is that you're taking in and what you're spending. That's what disclosure means. Disclaimer means putting a message on the communication itself, and the easiest way to think about it, I think, is a television ad. Disclaimer means putting a message on that ad that says, this is who paid for this ad. We, as candidates, are all familiar with the disclosures we make, paid for by the committee to reelect Senator X or Representative Y. But in this case, it'll be paid for by the whatever it is. It may be directly from Exxon or maybe from some combination of corporations that have formed a group that sounds innocuous, but under the bill, the top five contributors to that group would have to have their contributions listed so that individuals watching at home can see who's really behind these communications.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other question? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think a lot of times when we think corporations, we think of the large companies. But what I have found, at least in my years of running for office, is that the corporation checks I get are from doctors who incorporate for whatever reason, or dentists, or small businesses who incorporate just, I think, to protect their business from lawsuits or whatever the benefits are of being a corporation. So this would impact all corporations, regardless of size, from a one-person corporation to a 1,000 employees.
Or,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, exactly, yes.
Okay. And okay. If I may, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow up, Senator Meyer.
And if I'm understanding the bill correctly, and I may not be, the corporation has to list all of their, I forgot where it was, the all the board of directors, or is that, where did I read that at? What is their disclosure requirements?
Section 4 is the disclosure, that is the reporting of the contributions and expenditures. And you'll see in Section 4, that's on page 3 of the bill, Section 4 requires, beginning on page 3, lines 7 through 12, the name of the candidate or title of the ballot proposition, supported or opposed. And then the next line requires the name and address of each officer and director when applicable, because since this is now applying to all, both candidates, groups, and corporations, for a candidate it doesn't apply, but for a corporation it would. And then down a little bit further under sub 5, if you've made if a contributor has given money. If it's an individual, you've got to get the name, the address, and the principal occupation, employer, the contributor. That's something we're all familiar with doing. And if it's not an individual, meaning a group, non-group entity, or corporation, the name and address of the contributor and the name and address of each officer and director of the contributor. Does that answer your question?
Well, Madam Chair, if I
yes,
may
follow up, Senator Meyer.
So on line 11 where it says the name and address of each officer and director, so, like, if Car Safeway wants to contribute to a campaign to pass school bonds, do they have to list all of their directors and officers for Car Safeway nationwide, or just in Alaska, or just how does that work?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it would be whatever subdivision of Cars is giving the money. Now, in our case, I think Cars Alaska probably just has one entity. It would be that. Those officers and those directors. But if I could continue, it may become more relevant in And it may be that the oil industry is the best example, where you have, you know, sort of BP Alaska, BP National, and BP International. And it would be my assertion that it would that line would apply to the entity writing the check. That is, each one of those entities has separate checkbooks. At some point, that money is going to come from one of those three separate entities, and it would apply to those directors and officers.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I can follow up.
Yes, follow up, Senator Meyer.
So then, how would this apply to the unions? If the Teamster Union wants to give me is the limit $500? Or
Senator French.
Through the chair, keep in mind that this bill and the Supreme Court decision did not affect contributions to candidates. It opened up independent expenditures for and against candidates by corporations and unions. And so that's the milieu in which we're operating. It's not as if corporations can now give you or me or any other candidate money, but they can support us and oppose us independently on TV, print, radio, anywhere they want to.
And is there a dollar amount?
No. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, no.
Okay, so let's say the Teamsters want to support a candidate who's running against me in this case.
Sure.
What do they have to disclose? Do they have to disclose all their membership or just their officers of the in Alaska, or again, Teamsters nationwide, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, they would have to disclose from whatever entity wrote you the check. They would have to, you know, if it's the Teamsters Alaska, you know, local 959, right? They would have to disclose the name and address of each officer and director. That'd be my interpretation.
Okay.
Okay, good. And then also, if I may, Madam Chair, if I'm reading this correctly, on line 13, the aggregate amount of contributions is, you say, not exceed $100. Can you explain how that section works?
Sure. The actually, this may be one where I'll rely on either the drafter or the Department of Law, just so I don't get something on the record that doesn't belong there.
Well, let me just, I think my question is simpler than that. It just says, for all contributions to the person that exceed $100 in an aggregate year. And my question was going to be, why don't we require disclosure of all contributions, regardless of the amount, whether it be $20 or $50?
I think, let me just, if I may, Madam Chair, just double check. This person required a report. Report must contain the report. Now, keep in mind, the report of contributions must contain the aggregate amount of all contributions, so whether it's a dollar or 500 made to the person, and for all contributions that exceed 100, the date of the contribution and the amount contributed by each contributor, and for each contributor who's an individual, the name, address, principal, occupation, employer, which I think tracks with our amount of, that's the threshold for when we have to disclose who the contributor is, and it would apply to candidates just as well as to corporations. But if it's not an individual, that is, if it's a corporation, then the name and address of a contributor and the name and address of each officer and director. Does that clear it up?
Yeah, I think it does, Madam Chair. I think our current reporting, though, we're able, if we want to, disclose all the contributions.
Right.
Yeah.
$20. Go ahead.
Point of just we have to disclose all the contributions, and the name, it's the occupation and employer that some of us add voluntarily for all contributions. Others wait until the threshold is triggered.
Correct. And you think the way you have this written here tracks our current process?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, through the chair. Thank you.
Senator Pasquin.
Yes. As I read this or understand its intent is, for example, if we begin from the premise that the U.S. Supreme Court says that legal entities lawfully established now have certain rights, and that right is to make political speech under the provision that Senator Meyer was referencing here on page 3 at line 13 through 17. For example, if a legal entity like the corporation made an independent expenditure, they would be required to divulge whether the employees of that corporation are contributing to the corporation as compared to just the president of the corporation taking from the general funds of the corporation. And so this where it says all contributions to the person, meaning to the entity that received that. So if there's no employees backing it, that would be, you would know that as compared to the president of the corporation using corporate funds for the independent expenditure. Is that an appropriate analysis?
Okay,
through the chair, Senator Pascoe, yes, I believe that's accurate.
Okay, are there any questions, Senator Kukesh? Okay, Senator Meyer.
If I can just follow up a little bit on that, I guess going to a different section now, section 11 on page 5. And then on line 23, it says to include a statement from the principal officer approving the communications. What do you have and what do you envision there as far as a statement? Just saying we approve this?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, you've identified the two sort of the two meaty sections of the bill. Senator, the section we just left was about disclosure. Section 4, section 11 is about disclaimer. And yes, this is now we're in the milieu of ads that run on television or ads that run on the newspaper or radio. And we're accustomed under federal law to hearing, I'm Senator so-and-so and I approve this communication. Mm-hmm. And it's the same idea, only now that we have corporations spending for and against candidates, it's the intention of the bill to make certain that voters hear from the principal officer or the person sort of bringing the advertisement.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Meyer.
And again, if this is a corporation, it would be the local presiding officer of that corporation in Alaska that would be at the end of the TV commercial saying, "I'm Jim Bowles, president of ConocoPhillips Alaska, and we approve or we paid for this statement or this commercial." Is that what you're envisioning, or would it go up to the president of ConocoPhillips in Houston?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think we're back to the same sort of corporate boundary making. If it's, and let's use Exxon. If it's Exxon Alaska, it's Marty Massey. If it's Exxon USA, it's some other person. If it's Exxon Global, some other person. Whoever it is that sort of rules that particular domain is the person that has to come forward. And again, same for unions. Whichever union it is that's jumping into an election has to put, at least a face out there and say, we're behind this. I think it just helps for accountability.
Okay, and I don't disagree, and I think that's probably a good way to do it. It's just that more than likely the money for that campaign came from, in Exxon's case, Houston or London or Ohio. So, but yes, yeah, but so far, corporations are so big that you can get lost in the maze.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think you anticipate some of the difficulties we're going to have under this new landscape, and I'm certain that this bill is not going to stay in its present form for more than a few years before we have to react to whatever that's going to come to us this fall. But it's, my belief that we need to get something on the books at least to put up a little bulwark, and then.
Well, Madam Chair, I just would like to say that I think full disclosure is always the best route. And
thank you.
So I appreciate you bringing this bill forward and attempting to deal with what we've all been forced to deal with.
Except.
Yep. Thank you.
Anybody else? No. I'd just like to comment because my concern lies with the board of directors and having to report all their names. I go back to, I had a corporation through Wessel and Palmer Dental Center, and then I'd have to list myself as an officer and whoever was the secretary. Correct? Am I understanding that?
Yes, correctly? Through the chair, or to the chair, yes.
And that possibly could be cumbersome, but... and then also I wanted to ask, is the reporting criteria for corporations identical to the statutory requirements for other non-corporate groups?
Groups. We have two other funny entities, groups and non-group entities. The intention is to make them all equal, and we've got representatives here from both the drafters and the Department of Law to pin that down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly compliment you for tackling this. It's very difficult for us to even follow through, but we're going to go ahead. We've got a couple people, and maybe they can shed some light on this as well. And so off-net, we have Marilyn Russell from Fairbanks. Marilyn, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Could you state your name and affiliation and give your testimony on Senate Bill 284, please?
Certainly. I'm Marilyn Russell. I'm Marilyn Russell, and I'm president of the League of Women Voters of Alaska. The League supports Senate Bill 284 because our position on this subject is as follows. The League of Women Voters believes the goals of a campaign system should be, and I have four bullet points here, to ensure the public's right to know, to combat corruption and undue influence, to enable candidates to compete more equitably for public office, and fourthly, to promote citizen participation in the political process. The League of Women Voters filed a brief in support of the provisions in McCain-Feingold, also called the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, which restricted corporate participation in elections, and was disappointed in the recent court's decision, as were many Americans. Polls show that 8 in 10 Americans oppose the decision to allow corporate political spending. Since this decision has been made, it's vital that Alaska's campaign laws be amended to require full disclosure of campaign contributions by corporations and labor unions, which are currently not covered under existing laws regarding disclosure and disclaimers. The League has long been on record supporting public disclosure of campaign contributions of money, goods, as well as services. Citizens should know who is spending money supporting or opposing candidates, as well as ballot issues, and this information should be available as part of the communication itself, like every other campaign communication, etc. A loophole of this magnitude in Alaska's reporting laws is simply unacceptable and must be amended before the upcoming primary election and, of course, before the general election. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn. Does anyone of the committee here have a question for Marilyn? Okay, then we'll move to Matt Wallace in Anchorage. Matt, are you online?
I am online.
State your name, please, and affiliation for our record, and give your testimony on Senate Bill 284.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Matt Wallace. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or ACPIRG. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 284 today. The Citizens United decision in January certainly didn't invent the problem of big money influence in politics and the sort of skepticism and cynicism that often engenders in everyday Americans, but it certainly made the problem much, much worse and has really opened the floodgates for, again, just big money influence in the political process. And ultimately, you know, we may need an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to truly address the implications of this and other recent Supreme Court decisions on campaign finance laws. Certainly, there's a lot that we can do at the state and federal level to mitigate the influence of money in politics in the medium and long term. But in the short term, we believe it's absolutely critical that we pass a bill like Senate Bill 284 to, you know, I think Senator French put it well, to put up a little bulwark to get something on the books that will help mitigate undue spending in our campaigns in upcoming elections. We're especially encouraged by the two meaty pieces of the legislation, both to require the same sorts of disclosures for independent corporate and union spending that are currently required for campaign contributions to candidates. And again, the disclaimer piece we think is definitely both a good idea and an appropriate and creative use of disclaimer and disclosure requirements. We want citizens to know that when they see a negative attack ad that's just full of bio and vitriol, as so many negative attack ads are, that when it says it's paid for by Citizens for Truth, Justice, and the American Way, what that really means is it's being paid for by, you know, Corporation X, Y, and Z. And so for those reasons, again, we're in strong support of getting this bill on the books as soon as possible, and certainly look forward to working with the committee and the legislature in the future to work towards ways to lessen the influence of big money in politics and level the playing field so that citizens have the voice that they need in our political process.
Okay.
And I'll leave my testimony there. Certainly happy to answer any questions if there
are. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wallace, and thank you for taking time out of your day to give this testimony. Is there anyone here at the table that would have a question of Mr. Wallace? Seeing none, okay, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony because no one in the room has signed up to speak. Discussion.
Madam Chair, we do have John Patasson here from the Department of Law. I don't know whether committee members have questions for him, but they've worked fairly extensively on the bill, and I think he just came fresh from another hearing on a similar matter, so he may be all tuned up and ready to go.
Okay, would you like to come forward and state your name for the record? And
you're ready.
Certainly. No,
that was a real invitation. So.
I'm working very hard on this. If people want to hear about it, I'm certainly ready to talk about it. My name's John Patasson. I work for Department of Law. My main client is the Alaska Public Offices Commission. I came in a little bit late. I think through the chair, Senator French explained that we did, in fact, produce an Attorney General memorandum about a week and a half ago, and we came to the same conclusions that I think the bills are trying to address in many ways. Alaska may not prohibit independent expenditures attenuated to political speech outright. That changes the landscape of the law, there's no question. Currently, there are some disclosure and disclaimer laws that do apply to corporations, labor unions, companies making, were they to attempt to make an independent expenditure in a candidate election. However, we did point out that there are certain other laws that don't apply because we didn't, I think when the legislation was passed, it didn't contemplate corporations and labor unions making independent expenditures in candidate elections. Ergo, the law just didn't apply to those groups. We did, in the Attorney General memo, determine that a true source of funds is an issue going forward for corporations, labor unions, companies making independent expenditures in elections, candidate elections. And we did point out the current landscape of the law with respect to foreign national corporations making independent expenditures. So I'm here to answer any questions you may have. I have had a chance to review the proposed legislation. I'm here to answer any logistical questions as well. APOC is also on the phone, and there's a representative here if you have questions. So.
Okay. Does anyone, Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just ask maybe just generally, Mr. Patasson, is there anything in the bill, Senate Bill 284, that's inconsistent with the opinion that came out of the Attorney General's office last Friday evening, or two Fridays ago now?
I don't find anything inconsistent with the bill, no, and this in the memo, no.
Thank you.
That's encouraging. Thank you. Is there any follow-up, Senator French?
No, okay. Thank you.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you very much for your testimony, and I'm going to close public testimony for a second time. Do my fellow committee members have any comments or questions at this time? Okay, Senator Pasfan.
Well, I think Senator French should be commended because I think that when it comes to addressing the change in the legal landscape following the January 2010 Supreme Court opinion, that without anything here, it would be the potential for inequities in the election that's coming up. And I think that if a legal entity, whether it's a corporation or a union or any other group, if they don't want to disclose or disclaim, they should stay out of the political debate. If they're going to be engaged in the political debate, they should both disclose and disclaim. And I think that's part of the citizen's right to know. So I think we got to get this bill passed, and I'm glad Senator French is leading on this.
Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Meyer.
Yes, I think I'd have have the same comments that Senator Pascavan did, that if they want to be involved in the political process, then they should fully disclose, and they should be willing to fully disclose, and that's the right that we have, is to see who is contributing. I guess the only thing, only concern I have is I think there needs to be some cleanup, and I understand this goes to judiciary next, because I think unions or corporations who may want to participate, as I mentioned, in the passage of school bonds, for example, and we may want them to participate, they just need to know what the rules are, so that then later they're not slapped with a huge fine down the road. And it's still unclear to me as to if it is a national labor union or a national corporation, who has to disclose how many officers, how many board of directors, their address, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I think all that can be easily worked out, and so I think this is an excellent bill.
Okay. Then what is the will of the committee on this bill? Do I hear a motion to move Senate Bill 284 from committee with individual recommendations?
Madam Chair, I move that the committee move Senate Bill 284 from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Do I hear any objections? Hearing none, Senate Bill 284 moves out of State Affairs to Judiciary. Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign. House Joint Resolution 16, Disabled Veterans Procurement Presence, and we have the very capable Karen Sawyer here. Would you please state your name for the record, and you're representing what the sponsor was, of course, represented Carl Gatto. Would you please state your name for the record?
Good morning,
present
everyone.
Present the bill.
My name is Karen Sawyer, and I'm staff to Representative Carl Gatto. And I'm presenting CS for HJR 16, Service Disabled Veteran Procurement Preference. And I'd like to quickly summarize what those terms are. A service disabled veteran is a veteran who possesses a disability rating letter issued by the Department of Veterans Affairs, and it establishes a service connected rating between 1 and 100% disability. And a veteran-owned business means that that same veteran owns at least 51% of the business, or the 51% of the stock, which is owned by these veterans, or the management and daily business operations must be done by these veterans. The procurement preference means that in 2003, President Bush enacted or signed the Veterans Benefits Act, which strengthened a law that allowed service disabled veterans to go into business for themselves by bidding on federal contracts. 3% of all federally budgeted dollars were to be set aside for these businesses, ensuring that the small businesses in the state that were owned by these veterans were able to receive sole source and restricted competition contracts for goods and services used by the federal government. However, that has not been happening, and they're very low, if they've even started to, some of them are not doing it at all. Some refuse, some say it's too complicated, and some have been told that they're not to comply with this mandate. So this resolution urges the president to direct all the federal agencies in the state to fully comply with this 3% procurement preference. It also requests the House and Senate Small Business Committees and the House and Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs to hold joint oversight hearings into the refusal or failure of these agencies to comply. And we're also requesting that these hearings be done in the state of Alaska so that we can directly hear from them about the reasons. And that's pretty much the nutshell what this resolution is about. Just an FYI, according to the Small Business Administration, which oversees this program, as of 2008, out of 24 federal agencies nationwide, only 4 agencies were meeting the goal. And that's nationwide, that's not in Alaska. And we don't have any statistics on the federal agencies in Alaska who are not complying, but there's somebody online that has been working with this, Rick Davidge. Mm-hmm. He's with the Alaska Veterans Business Alliance, and he is very close to this resolution. So thank you for hearing this resolution. I appreciate it.
Okay. And for the record, we are dealing with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 16. So do I have any questions from committee members? No? Okay. Seeing it, we'll go ahead and we'll take public testimony at this time. Rick Davidge, are you online? Please state,
yes, ma'am.
State your name, please, and your affiliation, and please speak to Committee Substitute HJR 16.
My name is Rick Davidge. I'm the National Chairman of Economic Opportunities Committee for the Vietnam Veterans of America, which this issue falls under, as well as being State Council President for Vietnam Veterans of America and one of the founding board members for the Alaska Veterans Business Alliance. I am not a service-disabled business that's involved in this. The thing that's been surprising to me in my 30 years of work in federal and state and local government is the decision by local representatives of agencies, and in fact, in many cases, their senior people, to simply choose not to comply with the law. this is not a unique situation with respect to service-disabled veteran businesses, but this is one that's been on the front edge of this issue for a long time. There's no question what the law says, and in fact, we have new legislation in Congress now that will further mandate the 3% requirement. But presidents of the United States have signed executive orders. All agencies have been directed to put together strategic plans showing how they will implement the 3% set-aside. And yet consistently, particularly in Alaska, the procurement officers say, you know, I'm just too busy. I've got too much work. This is too much trouble. I just don't know how to find these guys. By the way, there are 300 service-disabled veteran-owned businesses listed on a register from the state of Alaska. And what this is doing is slowly disenfranchising Alaska veteran-owned businesses and service-disabled veteran-owned businesses from getting involved in many of the federal procurement and federal contracts that take place in Alaska. And as you know, Madam Chair and members of the committee, those are often in the tens of millions of dollars, particularly with respect to defense, et cetera. Now, let me first compliment the Army Corps of Engineers. About 2 years ago, we sat down with the Army Corps of Engineers and their procurement officer and their senior administrator, and they have made a significant effort and, in fact, have well exceeded the 3% set-aside. So it's something that can be done. It's simply a matter of getting the attention of these administrators, particularly in Alaska, to ensure that these mandates are carried out. This has been an effort headed by our congressional delegation, including former Senator Ted Stevens, for over 3 years, and yet we still don't seem to be able to get something to happen. So the understanding about a year and a half ago was if we could get a state resolution that gives focus to this problem and also calls for these oversight hearings, then both the Senate House SBA and Veteran Affairs Committees would put together a field hearing. We did have some of this discussed at the recent field hearing by the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and you have a copy of my testimony, hopefully, that's been handed out to you, which has lots of statistics with respect to the failure of federal agencies to meet these mandates. I'm open to any questions.
Okay, committee members, do you have questions for Mr. Okay, Senator French?
Just a comment. I want to thank Mr. Davidge for his continued involvement in these affairs. He's a tireless advocate for many causes, this one included, and I just want to say hello and thank you.
Okay, is there anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Davidge?
No, but I think Tim Wheeler is waiting online to testify.
That's correct.
In Washington, D.C., and hopefully Dave Kaufman as well.
No, I don't.
And I'll continue to monitor if you want to come back and ask me any questions.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll go to Tim Wheeler, Director of Economic Opportunities. Tim, are you online? Could you state your name, please?
Yes, ma'am, Chair. My name is Tim Wheeler. I'm the past president of Alaska Veterans Business Alliance. I'm also on the board of directors for the Alaska Veterans Business Alliance. And I'm also the national director for economic opportunities with the Veterans of Modern Warfare here in Washington, D.C. I've been behind this with Rick Davidge at the beginning of HGR 16. It's very imperative for the Alaska veterans to be able to go into business for themselves, especially if they get out of the military and don't want to work a job, they just want to do a business. This law, 106-50, which was the Veterans Entrepreneurship Act, we're going on 11 years of passage. August this year will be 11 years, and it's still not working. We've gone to many meetings, especially with the DOD up in Anchorage and within Alaska, and every time we met with them folks, they always told us, well, the laws are, the goals are being met nationwide, which you can pull from the SBA numbers. They've never met nationwide goals. So it's very disheartening for the veterans that want to go into business for themselves, so they just give up. Say, heck with the government, or the government, they look at it as the government turns a blind eye on them. So I'm just asking for immediate passage of this piece of legislation. There's no fiscal notes attached to it, so should, you know, I'd like to see it just go on to rules and go on to the floor and get this passed for all veterans in the state of Alaska. And I thank you for my time, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. With all due respect, I think we do have a fiscal note attached.
It's...
No, I'm sorry. No, it's a zero.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, are there any questions of Mr. Wheeler? Senator Meyer.
Yes. Mr. Wheeler, thank you for joining us today, and I want to also thank you for your...
Thank you,
I want to thank you, too, for your tireless... efforts on this issue. Are other states besides Alaska doing resolutions like this?
My phone call's getting broken up, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just asking, are other states other than Alaska doing resolutions similar to this?
Oh, yeah. You got other states out there that are working to try to get a similar type of legislation going to try to meet for their veterans within their states. Right. States offhand, I don't know. I believe Pennsylvania was one of them, but there's other states involved right now.
Okay, good. Okay, well, thank you very much.
As well as, you know, we on the national side, along with American Legion and other organizations, BVA, we're all behind this to try to get this going to meet this trigger since it's been in effect for 11 years now. And it's a goal. It's not a set number. It's a goal.
Okay, well, again, thank you for your efforts.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Is there anyone else that would like to give testimony on this resolution? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. Do the committee members have any comments or questions? Okay, what is the will of the committee then on this bill? Do I hear a motion to move CSHJR 16 from committee with individual recommendations?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the State Affairs Committee move HJR 16 from committee with individual recommendations and a zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Am I hearing any objections? Hearing none, CSHJR 16 moves out of state affairs. We are adjourned.
Thank you.